If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Bob, it's nice to see you again.
Good to see you, Luke.
For those that maybe don't hear you on with John on Wednesdays, you're missing a great conversation. I really think John just does it to get his own advice from Bob. And like he could just call Bob on his own because by now he's got his number. But then he's like, oh, I can have Bob on and I'll get 20 minutes out of the whole deal. And you'll always hear John ask the question. He'll be like, but wait, Bob, at my house, right?
And so, he does that a lot.
Yes. He does that a lot, right. But we love John. And for those that don't know, tell me a little bit about Bertog Landscaping, who you folks are, where you're located, where you service, and what it is you folks do.
Sure. The company's been around since 1974. We service anywhere from Lake Geneva into Chicago, out to Barrington. Full service, design, build, maintenance, lighting, irrigation. Got problems, we can solve them.
You know, when you think about the landscaping industry, and if you've been around for any number of years, it has evolved quite a bit, right? In 1974, in 1984, right? People were looking at magazines to get ideas and inspiration, and now you have a much more informed client than you did 30 years ago.
The power of the internet. It's
right.
Both good and bad.
Right, right. Both good and bad, right? I mean, but in a way, it's probably helped you be better at what you do.
Absolutely. A lot of the people now, you know, you're not just cutting your grass anymore like you were in 1974. People look for an extension of their home. They want to bring their spaces that are in the home to the outside. So we help bring that experience to them.
Right. I mean, we've talked with a bunch of different people today. I know that you're a partner here at Lurvy professionally, right?
Yes.
Guys do business with these folks as well. Tell me some of the trends that you see within the industry, that some of the things that the customers are asking you for.
Right now, it's a lot of outdoor patios. And one thing, a trend that we've noticed is front yard patios.
Huh.
A lot of people congregating in the front of their house, more neighborly. But yet they still have the intimate area in the backyard if they want to enjoy the privacy. So we've seen a lot of that. We've seen a lot of people asking about natives. We're talking about the butterfly gardens. Those have become very popular as well.
Right, right.
It's a variety of things. Then we have other people that want the pristine look of the English garden. And then we have other people that say, I don't want to cut my grass, put in fake lawns. So
right.
We'll do all, you know, whatever. There's so many variables that people have.
You talk about the fake lawn. That has come a long way, that when some of that product that's out there, when it's done right, you'd be hard-pressed on first glance. I mean, you would know. But but I mean, the average person would be like, oh, my God, that lawn looks amazing.
Right. And then putting greens became really popular, but then they realized in the artificial turf business that people want to, they don't want to have the putting green look at their home.
Right.
So they came out with the, you know, the 3-inch cut, and it's a Kentucky bluegrass lookalike.
Right.
And to your point, you cannot tell the difference.
Yeah, I spent some time this early spring. My wife and I spent some time out in Palm Springs, and we'd be out walking. And obviously, Palm Springs, have any of you been to Palm Springs? It's greener than you think. Like, you think it's the desert, but they have a lot of water out there. Evidently, someone said, oh, we have more water than we know what to do with. I'm like, really? Who says that? But a lot of synthetic lawns there. And, you know, obviously, if you're a landscaper cutting grass, that's not good for you. But there's other stuff that happens there as well.
Exactly. You have the artificial turf, but then it's the what you accent it with a koi pond or plantings and things, which, you know, we'll still have to come in and maintain it. And the turf is not maintenance-free either.
Right.
It has to be resanded. You should wash it periodically to get the germs on it. I have, my backyard is a dog run, actually, of artificial turf because our dog would always just come in muddy.
Right.
So I left my sprinkler system installed, and I just run that every so often where then it just flushes everything through.
Oh, that's smart. You know, what do they say? Male dogs kill the grass and the, no.
Females.
Females kill the grass and the male dogs kill all the bushes.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, right. You talked about natives, and that is something that, you know, I'm looking at these beautiful plants that are right in front of me. I don't know what here are natives, but there's not a lot of flowering stuff that's native, right? A lot of it's green and long and grasses.
That's not correct.
Oh, really?
There's a lot of...
See how I set them up there to look like an expert? See that?
The coneflowers, those are natives. Those are native? Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of color in the native.
And so when you say native, then are you specifically focused on, like, this area, right? Like, if someone comes to you, right? I mean, I know I might be asking an obvious question, but... A native plant in Texas might not necessarily be a native plant here.
Correct. We're in the hardiness zone 5, so the native plants in zone 5 are not the same as they are in Texas. Correct.
Right. Any of you have a question for Bob out there, raise your hand. We got a microphone. Oh, right there. Go ahead. What's your name? Where are you from?
Hi, my name's Eileen, and I'm from Naperville, and I'm a super fan. I have a friend who won't call me until after 10 a.m. on Saturday because she knows I'm listening.
Wow.
Her name's Vic. So thanks
The flip side to that is my wife's godmother, her late godmother, Joan, who never really got up early, would say, I heard the last 15 minutes of your show. So she only listened from 9:45 to 10. So I appreciate your friend.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's me with the Cubs game. anyhow, I have a two-part question, and it has to do with a patio. I have a brick paver patio that looks somewhat like this one, and I've been power washing the moss that grows, even though it's polymeric sand and it's been wet and it's not supposed to have any sprouts growing out of it. I think the water sits on there and then the humidity and then moss grows. Is there a way to stop the moss, like preventatively, to stop the moss from appearing other than wet and forget? I don't know. Would that do it? And then my other question is, I have a child. My one child's here. The other one lives in Riverside and has a sunken patio due to, I think, chipmunk activity. I think they probably didn't do 8 to 12 inches of pea gravel when they put the patio in, you know, 50 years ago or whatever. How to solve that problem? So moss and a sunken patio. Those are my questions.
Well, the moss, I think, Lou, you would agree, wet and forget.
Yeah.
That's the best product out there. So I've had good results with it. So if it keeps coming back, it's just repeat applications of the wet it and forget it.
Would you do it the wet and forget before the moss, or would you like, moss is here, wet and forget?
I'd probably get rid of the moss first.
Okay, like I did.
You can't spray it with it won't respond to like a non-selective herbicide because it's not a weed. So
okay.
It's a whole different family. So I would remove the moss and then wet it and forget it.
But polymeric sand then wet and forget?
Yes.
Because I got to put the sand back in. I, you know, took it all out with the power washer.
Right. And just make sure all the bricks are dry before you try the polymeric sand because that will be very difficult to get off later.
Good
right.
deal. Thank you.
That's a nightmare. Well, you had a second question.
The second question on the sunken patio, if it was 50 years ago, yeah, it's going to settle. But
yeah.
It probably is the fact that they didn't do the subbase deep enough. That's usually the biggest problem.
Yep.
And if somebody can cut a corner, not that somebody would, but if you're going to cut a corner, you're going to not take out 9 inches of excavated soil and put in the grade 9 gravel.
Would you take the pavers out and put the gravel in those spots and hope for the best?
I would take out the pavers and the gravel and start over.
Okay. In those spots.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
But something that he said, you really have to pay attention to, those bricks have to be dry. Because if you put that sand down and it's wet, it's a nightmare.
It's almost impossible to get off. The polymeric, you can use regular sand. If it's still a little damp, it's fine. If it's just jointing sand. But if you use the polymeric, it's...
Dry.
Okay.
It's like glue if it's wet, right?
Well, it has an adhesive in it. So, yes, it'll stick to the top of the brick.
Because you put it in, you... brush it in and then you spray it, right?
Very light mist, but make sure you have everything completely only in the joints.
Thank you.
I like that little on John's show nobody applauds. I mean, that was kind of weak, but it was not bad. How about an applaud for Bob?
Thank you.
All right, there you go. How can Bob help you?
Yes, Bob. Lou, I am so frustrated because I have two hydrangeas that are very healthy, lots of foliage, but no flowers. And I have the type that you don't cut back, and I did not do that. It has only bloomed once in 4 years. I am so frustrated. What can I do?
Change it out with one that flowers. You probably have what's called an endless summer hydrangea, which are not reliable flowering shrubs. They're very beautiful, their leaf structure, and they're used in the landscape for that, but they're not a reliable bloomer.
There you go. You get to hear yourself twice.
Yeah.
You got to turn that radio down, Lydia, please. Let's see. Lydia, is still there? I think she got so frustrated she just fell. All right, Lydia, I'm going to let you go just because we weren't getting a response from you, but we were hearing you. We have a question out here from a gentleman in the audience. What's your name? Where are you from, sir?
Hi, Lou. I'm from Schaumburg. And I have a question about my outdoor faucet. It's low
water pressure?
Yes.
Okay. Did you turn it on all the way?
Yes, I have, Lou.
And there's nothing there?
Well, it's low pressure.
Okay.
You know.
And how about your other? Do you have another spigot on the house? And that was fine.
No. I mean, I
both
have to
of
get
them
the
are
Silcock
no good.
Replaced.
Okay. Well, then let me ask you this. Do you have a basement in the house?
Yes, sir.
And how is the water pressure like at the basement sink?
It seems to be a little low also.
There's something else going on here then.
Galvanized versus copper?
Yeah, how old is the house? I'll just let Bob take this.
40 years old.
40 years old?
No, 50.
50 years old. So you have galvanized pipe?
I believe so.
Yeah. I mean, you probably have an issue with the atrophying of the pipes. And you probably, if you've got an issue with the basement sink that's low and the spigots, those are what's called unrestricted. And so you probably need to talk to a plumber about replacing the water lines to that, which is not an inexpensive proposition. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, you might even think, I mean, how long are you going to be in that house?
Maybe 5 more years.
Okay. And if you had to guess, if you 5 years you sell that house, God willing, are they going to tear the house down or are they going to remodel the house?
Like probably what's, remodel.
What's going on in the neighborhood?
I mean, it's...
it's a mix.
Yeah, there's no real tear downs going on.
Right. If you were to have the house completely repiped, okay, where they would do everything and repipe the whole thing, that would be an added value proposition for you when you go to sell.
All right.
Think about that.
Thank you, Lou.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you, asking that question. Any other questions for Bob here? Raise your hand. Bob, watering. I'm going to stay on that watering thing. It's been a weird year.
It has.
And it's like we go from too much rain, too little rain. My opinion, and you can completely differ from me, is that I've always given the advice, twice a week, 1 inch of water.
Inch to an inch and a half, yep.
Right?
Yeah, twice a week. Every other day, 10 minutes of zone is not the way to water.
The risk there, right, is that you, especially when you're talking about your turf, if you water too often, you're actually, the lawn may look good, but it's not strong, right?
Correct. You want the water to go into the root zone. So if you, I say water deeply and infrequently. So twice a week is perfect, but and then for like an hour, hour and a half, or put out a pie tin that's about an inch and a half in depth, and get that inch and a half of water in that one watering.
Yeah, and I know I realize that water's expensive for a lot of people, but you know the other thing is people will go, they won't water, and then all of a sudden the grass is brown, and like, oh, I got to water, and it's kind of, grass is resilient, but it's a little too late at that point. You're going to have to wait a while for that to come back.
If you can't be religious about the watering, you're better off letting the lawn go dormant, because otherwise if they're doing a little spritzing and a little sprinkling, those roots are going to stay at the surface. And then in a drought, you're going to just burn up the roots, too. So you're better off just letting it go dormant unless you can water or if you have an irrigation system to let it do it for you.
I got one more question, then we'll get to this lady here. We had a gentleman here from Toro talking about battery-operated implements. You, as a professional landscaper with certain municipalities, are limited a little bit now, right? There's some regulations about using some quieter equipment. Is that something you've seen come into play for you?
Yes. A lot of the North Shore towns, we cannot use anything that has an engine on it. It has to be battery powered. I'm going to disagree with you, though, that it's not as noisy. Some of those blowers, the electric ones, are just as noisy.
Yeah.
So they're getting off on saying it's the carbon footprint they're lowering, not the noise.
Right. Because you probably have your crews have the backpack versions of them, which
yes,
are very powerful. They're
yes,
great, but they're loud.
They are.
Yeah. All right. Yes, ma'am. Where are you from, and what's your question for Bob?
I'm from Chicago. Tomatoes. I plant tomatoes practically every year and always had a good luck. And this year, my tomato leaves are shivered and also brown. And there's plenty of flowers, but they're drying out and no fruit. They're just dropping. What did I do wrong?
I might have to defer to my wife on this one, but she's the gardener.
Is she here?
She is, actually. But the only thing I can think of, it sounds like it's a lack of water if the leaves are browning and wilting. If there's plenty of flowers, and do you see bees in the area, the pollinators? So
not really, no.
And did you buy them as plants or did you buy them as seeds?
It was from the seeds.
Yeah.
You know, but they were, you know, really nice.
And did you plant the seeds? In other words, did you grow these inside and then transplant
them? They were grown inside and
that's usually
transplanted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have more than one?
I have about 12.
Okay.
And none of them are bearing fruit?
No.
Wow.
Actually, the couple fruits that I got on the bigger tomatoes, not the cherry tomatoes, they're getting brown spots on the bottom of the fruit, too. So I think that's iron issue.
Could be. Are you
iron deficiency? And because I was here.
Come up here one second. We're going to try this. So this company, I was talking to Bob off the air about this. This company, I don't know anything about this company. It's called Maxi Crop. It's soluble seaweed, and it's full of potash. And when I said to Bob, it's full of potash, he immediately said, it's great for the roots. Follow the directions on that. I mean, at this point, you got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
Right?
I just had one more question. Are the plants in a pot or are they in the ground?
In a pot and in the ground.
So the ones in the pot, you got to change out that soil every couple of years. A lot of people just automatically, soil.
You did nothing wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. All I can think is that you were not nice and somebody's punishing you. you kind of have that look. You don't look that nice. Yeah. You look like not a nice person. No, I'm kidding. It's tough. I mean, I have friends of mine that are big gardeners, and I know that my friend Jim, who plants all these plants, said that he's had some seasons where he has more tomatoes than he's given them away, right? And then bad seasons, well, whether it's a bad seed. I mean, but he has always said to me that when it comes to tomatoes, coming from seed as opposed to buying the plants is the best way to go. But try that. You know what? I'm going to do me a favor. I want you to try that. And then in a couple weeks, I want you to call me and let me know what happened. All right? Thank you. Another question? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I live in Riverwoods, and we got two ponds in our front yard. And we've lived there for years. And our yard is full of poison ivy. What do you recommend for the poison ivy? Ooh.
Poison ivy is the best way to remove it, actually, is mechanically. So prune it out, and then what you have to do is there's a herbicide that you have to apply on the stems after you cut them. And it's an oil-based herbicide. You'll have to Google for a name for it. I don't know off the top of my head. But like using a Roundup or a non-selective herbicide will not kill poison ivy. You need a herbicide specifically labeled for poison ivy, but you're going to have to first get in there and cut it and mechanically remove
everywhere,
it.
Yeah.
Okay,
which you need to be careful about because you don't want to get, you know, attacked by the poison ivy. So you got gloves.
Everywhere. It's everywhere.
Right.
I got it everywhere.
Right. Yeah. I know you get a lot of questions before I got to take a break with John about clover and Creeping Charlie. And, you've said that with that product, the best time to use a herbicide or a herbicide is when it's flowering, right? So that it gets down to the roots.
Right. The plant is spending its most energy when it's flowering. So everything's moving in the plant, and it's going to take in the herbicide and translocate down into the roots much faster than when it's not flowering.
But it's not a dagger, right? It's still, even with that, you're still going to be pulling this stuff out. Creeping Charlie is just really tough.
Creeping Charlie's a tough one. Clover, you can knock it out with one hit if you do that at the right time. But Creeping Charlie, it's going to two applications.
Yeah. Bob Bertog, everybody's going to be here for a few more minutes. So if you've got some questions, call us at 857-5574-LOU or questions from the audience. We're live at Lurvy Home and Garden. We'll take a quick break and be right back. We have a question from the back row. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for coming to Lurvy's, and I shop here. Luella Preston Niles. My question is, with the smoke and haze that we've had that has left residue on my car, what has it done to our plants, our gardens, and our lawns?
I had a feeling this was coming, so I did my homework.
Oh, good, good.
The only thing it's going to do is same thing it did to your car. Just put dust on your plants, and you can just rinse it off. Because unlike a human, the plants don't have lungs the way they breathe. They do transpire through the leaves, but everything I've looked into and read this week, it's not going to harm any of the landscape.
It's tough, though. I mean, are any of you having a hard time breathing with the smoke? Anybody? No, not really. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's been really a concern, I think. I mean, I feel terribly for the people in Canada. They got a lot worse than us, but you got to be careful, and I understand it's going to be even worse today, so please be careful out there. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Bob. Lou, this one's for Bob. I have a question. I have grass that I could pull up like a carpet, but I dig for grubs, and I'm not finding any grubs. Have you seen fungal damage that mimics grub damage?
Not that mimics grub damage, but there has been huge fungal problems this year with the heat and humidity. What you're describing, though, sounds like it could be annual poa. Do you live near a golf course?
No.
Okay, you could still get the annual poa. It pulls up real easy, like a carpet, but it's still green, correct?
Much of it is green, yes.
Then it's probably just annual poa, which is a grassy weed. Very frustrating for golf course superintendents. You can't eradicate it with a non-selective herbicide and then just reseed the area. But if you can live with it, it's still green, it will die with the first frost.
Yes, it does die.
Then it's
and I reseed it. I've been doing it for 20 years.
Well, you can put down a pre-emergent in the spring that will keep the poa from germinating. But you got to get it down early, like in March.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You've been doing a good job, though, for 20 years. I mean, just keep it up, right? It gives you a reason to live.
Yep. Right. Reason to stay thin.
Exactly. Right. Let's go to the phone lines, 857-5574-LOU. This is Jan in Chicago. Jan, you've got a question for Bob?
Yeah, I do. A quick question. Years ago, I bought some beautiful shrubbery from your store there. I don't know the name. It's a bush, and it's a bright blaze red in the fall. I think they're burning dwarfs or something. I don't know. But they've gotten overgrown, and they're crowding my driveway. If I cut them back, it'll all be sticks. they're about 6-7 feet tall now, and I'd like to cut them back down to like 4 feet, but there'll be nothing left to the leaves. It'll all be the sticks. Do I have any solution here?
Well, you can cut them back. Don't do it now. This is a project for in the wintertime. Get out there in January. Take your pruners out there. And you want to knock out about a third of the oldest canes. So the thickest, oldest canes, you want to cut all the way down from the bottom. And then go ahead and crop the top down. You can cut as much as a third of the plant and not do any harm to it. But you want to get those older canes all the way down at the base. So your base, and then you'll get new sucker growth from the base. So it won't just be all sticks.
So I got to wait till they want to fall after the leaves drop?
I would do it in the dead of winter when the plant's completely dormant.
I just cut them all the way back down, and they'll be maybe a little barren for next year, but it'll come back.
Yeah, you'll be shocked at the sucker growth you'll get at the base of the plant.
And does that apply also for these? I have these bright yellow ones too in the yard. I think forsythia.
Same thing. Yep. Same process. Go ahead and do dormant pruning and cut out a third of the plant.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
You want to cut out about a third of the plant and reduce it in size.
About a third down, and it's going to look okay. All right. I just didn't know because there's not going to be much left to the beautiful part of it, but if they're going to regenerate, I'm happy with that. Thank you so much.
You know, years ago when we had that polar vortex, I'm sure you remember this, right? Plants were dying off like crazy. And we had some burning bushes surrounding like a septic area, beautiful bushes, and they looked awful. And the landscaper at the time said, cut them back. You know, I was like, can we pull those out and replant them? He goes, let's cut them back. Exactly what you just said. And he goes, it's going to come back. You got to wait a little bit, which I realize that your customers don't want to wait, right?
They
want, but now they are, I mean, it's years later. They look as full and as beautiful as they did before. But he said, just like you said, the timing is important of when you do it.
If you did it now in this heat, the plants would go into shock and die. So you have to do it when they're completely dormant.
All right, let's get one question here. Yes, ma'am.
Lou, my name is Dee from Park Ridge. My question is, when my washing machine starts, the water, it has a very bad odor.
There is a filter probably in line that needs to be cleaned out.
Where at?
Well, you got to take the appliance apart.
My husband's very handy.
All right. Well, then follow the hoses and follow where it goes in, and that needs to be cleaned out.
Oh, thank you.
And that should, but it's a little... involved, but he can do it. He knows.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. That is our last call, sponsored by Mitsubishi Electric Heating and Cooling. Our last question, when you're heating and cooling your home, Mitsubishi Electric is the last call you need to make. How about a round of applause for Bob Bertog, not only for sponsoring it, but sharing your knowledge with us. It's always a pleasure to see you. Listen to John Williams Monday through Friday, but Bob's on typically on Wednesdays and offers great advice, and it's always nice to hear you on with John.
Thanks for having me, Lou, and I'm on with John on Wednesdays from 1:10 to 1:30.
That's great. Thank you. We'll take a quick break and be right back. I want to thank all of you for coming here today. That's so nice here in the Garden Center. I really so appreciate it. I also want to thank a crew of so many people that worked so hard. Engineer Dan Long, who came here last night. Bob Ferguson back at the studio. Jeff Carlin is here. Interns Jack Kiefer and Caitlin Geirich. Steve Gotzel, Jeannie McGrory, Karen Moss, Joe Marino, Michael Piff, Christina Quinn, and Marlene Wells.